Welcome to Shir and Svarno Parshas Vayikra. Yesterday we started the first Shir and Svarno Parshas Vayikra. We saw that the Svarno has a hakdama, an introduction to what he considers to be the overarching theme of Sefer Vayikra, which again, just to review from yesterday, is the Svarno sees Sefer Shmos as the Sefer that describes how the Shekhinah is brought into Klal Yisrael, and Sefer Vayikra is the methodology which will maintain the Shekhinah in Klal Yisrael. All of the mitzvahs which are described in Vayikra are meant to anchor the Shekhinah in Klal Yisrael. So the Svarno has a tendency to like overviews, you know, an overarching picture of what to put all the details into some kind of framework. So what we're going to take a look at tonight is the framework that the Svarno sets up for understanding the Karbanos. He does so in the very towards the beginning of Perek Aleph. Really, Perek Aleph Pasuk Beis, and he introduces a whole long section with the words "V'hamechuvan be'ele haparshios." The goal of these next sections of Sefer Vayikra, again primarily Parshas Vayikra and Parshas Tzav, is to lay out the structure of the Karbanos, namely, "Hu lefarish minei mevi'ei hakarbon." The point over here is to explain who is eligible to bring a karbon, umine hanikrovim, and the types of substances which can be brought as a karbon, umine hakarbonos, the different types of karbonos, vesibos hakrova, and the reasons behind why one would bring a karbon. Now, what we just said is not, I don't think it's a chiddush of the Svarno. In other words, yeah, that's what's discussed in these parshios. You know, what are the different types of karbanos? Who brings karbanos? Under what circumstances? But the Svarno has a number of unique insights because of the way he structures things into all of these issues that relate to the karbanos. I want to try to pull out a couple of them and, you know, discuss them tonight, perhaps tomorrow. We'll see how much time we have to discuss everything. So first, the Svarno starts off talking about who is eligible to bring a karbon. Upiresh, the Torah tells us, shekarbonos nedava mekablin osam yikol adam afilu min agoyim. As we referenced briefly last night, the Torah tells us that a voluntary karbon can be brought from anyone, even a non-Jew. Kimo shebi'er achar kach, as the Torah itself alludes to later on in Parshas Emor, Ba'amro umiyad ben nechar lo sakrivu es lechem elokeichem mikol eila. The Torah Parshas Emor describes karbanos that have various types of mumin, of blemishes, and it says you should not accept such a karbon miyad ben nechar, from the hand of a foreigner. So what the Torah seems to be saying is that even a non-Jew for whom the bar is held lower, perhaps, in terms of what he's allowed to bring as a karbon. You know, the Jews' karbonos perhaps are held to a higher standard, but even a non-Jew is not allowed to bring a blemished karbon. Miyad b'nechar lo sakrivu leslechem elokeichem mikol eila. But the implication, says the Svarno, is that a blemished karbon cannot be brought by a non-Jew, but an unblemished karbon, a karbon which is perfectly fine, can be brought by a non-Jew. The non-Jew is not excluded from bringing a karbon, as we noted yesterday. Adam ki yakriv mikem, when a person brings a karbon to Hashem. It doesn't say, you know, daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yoviu karbonos, speak to Klal Yisrael to bring karbonos. Adam, when a person brings a karbon, the concept of a non-Jew bringing a karbon is a valid concept in halacha, and indeed, when Shlomo HaMelech dedicates the first Beis HaMikdash, he anticipates non-Jews coming to the Beis HaMikdash to daven, to seek out Hashem, to bring karbonos. However, as we noted yesterday, v'hinei mishumadim gruim min agoyim, a Jew who has veered from the path of Judaism, a mishumad, someone who has rejected Judaism, and again we'll see in a moment more precisely what that means. So such a person is on a lower level than a non-Jew vis-a-vis the karbanos. A non-Jew can bring a karbon. A mishumud is not allowed to bring a karbon. We saw that yesterday where the Svarno quotes, that's Chazal's drasha on the pasuk, Adam ki akriv mikem, a person, some of you who are able to bring karbonos, mikem v'lo kulchem, not all Jews are eligible to bring karbonos. Jews who have turned their backs on Judaism cannot bring karbonos. So the irony is, the non-Jew can bring a karbon, the renegade Jew cannot bring a karbon. But as we explained yesterday, when you look at the Sfarno's understanding of karbonos, it makes perfect sense that that should be the case. We saw yesterday, we'll come back to it today, the Sfarno understands that the essence of the karbon is not the slaughtering of the animal, it's rather that when the animal is slaughtered, in the context of the person bringing the karbon having a sense of hachna'a, of contrition, right? I bring this karbon, and this karbon is a way of my showing my contrition before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then that causes the karbon to be accepted. If the person is a renegade Jew, so then what kind of contrition is he displaying? Yeah, I'm contrite, but I'm going to, after I finish bringing the karbon, I'm going to go back and worship Avodah Zarah. I'm going to go back and be Mechalel Shabbos. So what's your contrition? The contrition has to be that the person, at least in the broad strokes, is accepting to live a lifestyle as dictated by the Torah. So the Meshuvah, the Jew is a renegade Jew, by definition, can't really bring an acceptable karbon, because the karbon, to say that he's contrite is laughable under the circumstances. The non-Jew is not Jewish. Okay, so the non-Jew can bring a karbon. That's not a problem. Right? There's no lack of contrition on the part of the non-Jew, insofar as he's bringing the karbon. What are these mishumadim? How would we define these renegade Jews? So he says, b'frat, especially mishumadim la'avodah zarah, u'l'chavol shabbosos b'farhesya. A Jew who is a regular idol worshiper, or someone who typically breaks Shabbos in public, for these purposes is considered to be a mishumad, a renegade Jew. It doesn't have to be necessarily that he's renounced Judaism in favor of another religion. That's how, in colloquial terms, we refer to a mishumad as a Jew who converted out. But in this context, it just means a Jew who is in violation of some of the fundamental aspects of Judaism, and the two that he calls attention to are Avodah Zarah and Chilul Shabbos. So then he goes on a few lines later, the Sfarno, to make a very interesting observation on the basis of this. Again, so far the notion that a renegade Jew cannot bring an acceptable karbon is not the Sfarno's chiddush. Chazal say that. Okay. But here comes the chiddush from the Sfarno. Umizeh, based on the above, hisboer inyan kayin, ba'amro ve'el kayin ve'el minchoso lo sha'a. Based on this, we can understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu rejected the karbon of Kayin in the very beginning of Chumash, right? Hevel and Kayin, two brothers, they each bring karbonos. Hashem accepts the karbon of Hevel, he rejects the karbon of Kayin. It's not clear at any point in the Chumash why Kayin's karbon gets rejected. It's not clear. So says the Sfarno, I'll tell you why. Ki hayahu mikat haminim, she'en mekablin mehen karbon. You know why Hashem didn't accept the karbon of Kayin? Because he was a heretic. And again, a heretic, like a renegade Jew, is someone who, even if they bring a karbon, the karbon automatically is not going to be accepted. Now wait a minute. Where exactly do we see that Kayin was a heretic? So the Sfarno goes on to say, Kimo shahochiach sofo al tchiloso. As subsequent events prove that Kayin was a heretic. Okay, so what does that mean? What were the subsequent events that proved that Kayin was a heretic? Okay, well, subsequent events proved that Kayin, was a murderer. But being a murderer and being a heretic are not exactly the same thing. Right? You can be a murderer and not be a heretic. You can be a heretic and not be a murderer. So the fact that Kayin is not such a great guy, okay, that we definitely take away from the Chumash. In what sense do you see that he's a heretic? So Rabbi Kuperman over here references the Sfarno's comments back in Parshas Bereishis. So it's not just, so the Sfarno over there says, it's not just that he killed his brother. Again, I don't mean to dismiss the fact, obviously, that he killed his brother, but, you know, perhaps he didn't realize what he was doing. I mean, again, there had never been a murder in human history before. Maybe he didn't realize, you know, what happens when you hit somebody like that. Maybe it was a fit of passion. But when the Ribbono Shel Olam comes to Cain and says, "Ei hevel ochicha," where is your brother Hevel? So Cain says, "Lo yodati," I have no idea, thinking that he can fool HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What on earth was he thinking that he could fool HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You know, you don't think HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew where Hevel was? So apparently, says the Sfarno over there, Cain thought that no, maybe Hashem didn't know where Hevel was. Because maybe Hashem, he thought, is not omniscient, is not all-knowing. Right? Okay, there's a very powerful being called God, but who says that God knows where Hevel is? Maybe when I, you know, when I dug a hole and I buried Hevel, maybe I hid him from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and maybe I can tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Oh, Hevel, yeah, he's in a meeting. He'll be back soon." Right? What's that? This is after the carbon. Right, okay, so what the Sfarno seems to be saying when you put everything together is as follows. It's not the murder that disqualified Cain from bringing a carbon, because the truth is the murder happened later. You can't, again, like you say, I can't hold him accountable for a murder. Oh, no, but one second. I can't hold him accountable for a murder that hasn't happened yet, right? That's not fair. But but Cain's reaction to the murder, namely, "I don't believe that God knows where my brother is," shows you that from the get-go, Cain was a heretic. In other words, that didn't change. The fact that he didn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's knowledge of everything in the world was a basic belief that Cain had. But he doesn't have to demonstrate it. That's the point. In other words, it's not a punishment that Cain's carbon wasn't accepted. It's that by definition, somebody who's a renegade Jew can't bring the carbon. Right? Now, again, you'll tell me Cain's not Jewish, right? But he wants to say the following idea. And again, let's try to fill in the gaps over here, because the Sfarno doesn't say very much. He just puts a couple of words down, and then we have to figure out the rest. It seems like the Sfarno was saying as follows. Again, we said that the very essence of a carbon is to show contrition. But part of showing contrition is also the belief that God knows my actions and holds me accountable. If I don't believe that God knows my actions and that God will hold me accountable, there's a limit to how contrite I can really be. So what am I doing when I bring the carbon? I may be doing something else. I may be trying to press magic buttons and somehow make HaKadosh Baruch Hu do good things for me. But a carbon can't be brought out of a sense of contrition if I don't have that fundamental belief that God will hold me accountable for my actions. Apparently, Cain did not really believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds us accountable for our actions. He never had that belief, but that belief comes out in his reaction to HaKadosh Baruch Hu asking, "Ei Hevel Ochicha," where's your brother Hevel? So again, it's not that Cain is being punished. It's that Cain's mindset is antithetical to what the carbon is supposed to accomplish. And that's not a Jewish, non-Jewish thing. Again, for a Jew who's a renegade, he can't have the proper type of contrition. The Sfarno seems to be suggesting that there's a certain type of non-Jew who might be disqualified for bringing a carbon as well, whatever that would be. A non-Jew maybe who's not a believer in God. A non-Jew who doesn't believe in God's providence or something like that. Again, that's what he seems to be suggesting. But that's why Cain's carbon was disqualified. You know, it wasn't so much because of what Cain did or didn't do. It's because of what Cain believed or didn't believe. And that led to the carbon almost being a farce. If you don't believe that God holds you responsible and you're not expressing contrition before HaKadosh Baruch Hu when bringing the carbon, so what are you hoping to accomplish? What exactly does this carbon do when you bring it before the Ribbono Shel Olam? So that's one chiddush of the Sfarno that emerges from his understanding of these carbonos. Let's take a look at another interesting chiddush, which also ties together some of what's discussed here at the beginning of Vayikra with stories that we know from the beginning of Bereishis, but you know, the Sfarno makes us think about it in a different way. So over here he says, Upiresh Shemine Hanikrovim Heim Bakar Vatson Ba Behema Vitarim Uvnayona Ba Ofels Vesolas Veshemin Ulavona. The Torah explains that the types of things that you can bring as karbonos are cattle and sheep among animals, tarim and binayona, pigeons and turtle doves among birds, and flour and oil and frankincense. Now, if you were to ask me outside of the Sfarno, I would say there's nothing intrinsic about these items that makes them fit for being brought up as a karbon. I'm not really sure why the Torah chooses to limit karbonos to these items. You know, why, for instance, I can't shecht a chicken on the Mizbeach, but I can't. Okay, the Torah says the only birds that work are pigeons and turtle doves, right? The only animals that work are sheep and cattle, right? Why the Torah doesn't like, you know, deer? I don't know, you know, but the Torah says that that's not acceptable as a karbon. But I would think that that's unique to the system of karbonos set up by the Torah. Comes the Sfarno, and the Sfarno seems to understand that the insistence on these items specifically is not limited to Jews bringing karbonos, but is intrinsic to what's acceptable as a karbon, even for non-Jews, even pre-Matan Torah. And in that sense, he explains the following. Let's go back to Parshas Noach. The Mabul finishes. Noach comes out of the Teva. And he offers up karbonos before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What karbonos does he offer up? So the Pasuk says that he took from the Behema HaTahara and the Of HaTahar. He took kosher behemoths, kosher domesticated animals, and kosher birds, and he offered them up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So just, you know, to take an example, I wasn't there, you know, I was born a few years after the Mabul, I don't remember it so well, but when it says, Mikol Ha'of HaTar, that he was able to take from all the kosher birds and offer them up as karbanos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it would seem that Noach offered chickens as part of that karbon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Chicken is a kosher animal. It's an of tahar. A chicken is not an animal which would be acceptable as a karbon in the Beis HaMikdash. Again, the only birds that are acceptable as karbonos in the Beis HaMikdash are tarim and bnei yona, pigeons and turtle doves. You know, chickens don't count. Right? You can go into the backyard, you know, in one of our co-op buildings and find birds that are royal karbon that you can make into karbonos, but chickens don't count, ducks don't count, geese don't count, whatever. Okay, but Noach apparently sacrificed all of those birds as part of his karbon. Then the Torah says over there in Parshas Noach, "Vayorach Hashem esreach anichoach." HaKadosh Baruch Hu smells the sweet smell of the karbon, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Ah, I'm not going to destroy the world ever again." You know, all the Mefarshim are bothered by that language in the Chumash, Vayorach Hashem Esreach HaNichoach. It depicts HaKadosh Baruch Hu in very human terms. You know, Noach is making a barbecue, as it were, and, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a big smell, geshmak, and, you know, he says, okay, I'm not going to destroy the world ever again. It's very much a very human-like description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which certainly doesn't fit what we believe about, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, you know, one way to interpret that, as the Targum does over there, is to say that it's an expression. You know, obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not smelling in the human sense of the term. It's a way of saying that this was pleasing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Sfarno has a very, very different take. He says as follows. Omar, the Pasuk there is telling us, Shekibel oso hachelek mikarbonosov, shahoyo roi l'reach yichoach. Not all of Noach's karbonos were acceptable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If, for instance, when dealing with birds, if Noach brought a chicken karbon, and a duck karbon, and a goose karbon, and a pigeon karbon, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu only accepted the pigeon karbon. Because only the pigeon, although they're all kosher birds, but only the pigeon is fit to be a karbon. So when it says the Svarno, Vayarach Hashem, Esreach HaNichoach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu smelled the sweet smell, that's a technical term. What does it mean? It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted those karbonos which are fit for being accepted. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not accept all the karbonos, but he was able to, as it were, sift out the appropriate and acceptable parts of the karbonos, accept those, and reject the rest of Noach's offerings. Biyoso min amin haroi lakrova. What he accepted was that part of Noach's karbonos which were fit for being offered up. Avolo kibel kol karbono. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not accept the entirety of Noach's karbon. Shahayo mikol ha-behema ha-tahora mikol ha-ofator. Because Noach offered up many animals and birds that were kosher, but are not acceptable as karbonos. So those parts, those animals and birds, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not accept. So Vayarach Hashem es Reach HaNichoach means HaKadosh Baruch Hu only accepted the Reach Nichoach, Reach Nichoach being a technical term that means the part of the karbon which is good as a karbon. This is a very fascinating idea the Sfarno is putting out here. Basically, the Sfarno is saying that there's something fundamental about the types of animals and birds which the Torah accepts as being karbonos, which makes them fundamentally proper for being karbonos. And even Noach, I mean, Noach's not Jewish, he's before Matan Torah, even Noach can only enable a karbon to be accepted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu if the karbon is of a type of animal or bird which the Torah many, many years later is going to deem as being acceptable. In other words, there's something fundamental about a pigeon that makes it more acceptable as a karbon than a chicken. It's not just the Torah decided that. There's something inherent in what's called a karbon that it makes sense for a pigeon to be a karbon. It doesn't make sense for a chicken to be a karbon. What that thing is, I don't know. But you see, that's the Sfarno understands. Noach is held to the same standards that the Torah itself is going to impose at a later point in history. More chidushim. Let's just put out there some of the beautiful... Wait, so... He's saying, well, why does he assume that by Noach it wasn't accepted? Yeah. So I think it's coming from that phrase Vayarach Hashem Esreach HaNichoach, which it's a problematic phrase. It's a problematic phrase because it implies human characteristics to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the question is, what does it mean? So one way to explain it is simply, well, it's a metaphor. It's a turn of phrase for saying Hashem was happy. All right, but then why not just say, so Hashem was happy? So the way the Sfarno understands it, it's a very, very technical kind of phrase. It's not a melitza. It's not simply a metaphor or the like. It's a very technical kind of phrase. HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted, Vayarach, he accepted, Reach HaNichoach, the acceptable part of the karbon, right? The idea of Reach HaNichoach, throughout Chumash, when described in the context of karbonos, speaks to acceptability. Reach Nichoach, lefnei Hashem. It should be a sweet smell before Hashem. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted that which was acceptable. That's the way he's reading it over there. And I think, again, what's driving him to read it that way is because otherwise the phrase is either extraneous or just problematic in terms of what it means. So he comes to that conclusion. Another incredible chiddush. So we know that there are different types of karbonos, chatos, asham, the like. Why is it, to take an example, the Chazal tell us that the ola, the burnt offering, is mechaper al hirhurei halev. It atones for sinful thoughts. And the karbon chatos atones for certain types of sinful actions. What's the rationale behind that? So he says the following. We know that you can sin in your thoughts, you can sin in actions. In order to atone for thoughts, it makes sense that that which atones for thoughts should be transformed entirely into the fire and smoke on the Mizbeach. Why? Because thoughts don't have any substance. They have a lot of implications, you know, they impact on what we do. They have a lot of impact, but they don't have any substance. You can't, you know, they're intangible thoughts. So how do you atone for thoughts? So burn a carbon in its entirely so that the carbon becomes intangible. The intangible carbon is mechaper, it atones for the intangible sin of thoughts. Ulechaparas ha-maisa, but when it comes to sinful actions, ye'osu chelke ha-carbon ha-nitan la-kohanim. There it makes more sense to take the limbs of the animal and not to burn the carbon in its entirety, but rather to give those limbs, those part of the animal to the Kohanim. Vizeh, that is to say, shetmuras evrei hachote, shesasku bepulas hara, it was the limbs of the sinner that did this evil thing that the chatos is coming to atone for. Yinasing chelek le'evrei ovdei hakel hamisaskim b'avodasa. So instead, the limbs of the animal, that's the carbon, should be given to the Kohanim who serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and their consumption of those limbs will atone for the sins done with those limbs by the sinner. V'chein omru chazal, psachim nun teso medbeiz, kohanim ochlim ubailim miskaprim. The kohanim eat the limbs of the chatos, and the owner of the carbon chatos, the one who brought the carbon chatos, achieves kapara. But the Svara over here is pointing out the following thing, again, maybe a very simple thing, but, you know, I think it's worth discussion. Isn't it strange that the carbon chatos ends up getting eaten by the Kohanim? Right? I mean, I it's almost like the Kohanim are benefiting from the sin that this person did. You can almost imagine, you know, Kohanim who maybe aren't so scrupulous, like cheering the guy on, you know, to be Mechal Shabbos B'Shogeg, you know. We got dinner tonight, you know, if you go do an Aveira, you know, so we'll eat better tonight, right? Obviously, it's not true, but, you know, it seems just a little strange. Why are the Kohanim eating the limbs, you know, they're eating the parts of the carbon chatos? It just seems odd. So the way the Svarno is explaining, there's tremendous symbolism in that. The Kohanim eating the limbs of the carbon chatos is really a way of taking, you know, it's symbolically taking the limbs of the person that were steeped in sin and saying, we're going to make these limbs connected to people who serve Hashem, not just to burn them on the Mizbeach. That was good for an Ola, to be mechaper for Hurei Alev, to be mechaper to atone for the intangible thoughts which a person might have of sin. But for the actions of sin, the things that the person is doing with his limbs, we don't just want to burn them. We don't want to just get rid of the sin. We want to teach the person, use your limbs for good things. So how do you teach the person, use your limbs for good things? Give the limbs, the parts of the animal, to the Kohanim to eat. Their eating is a way of saying, it's almost as if they're dedicating the limbs of the animal, and by extension, the limbs of the person, to now be involved in mitzvos as opposed to averos. Don't just get rid of the bad, but substitute something good in the place of that which is bad, and elevate the person to, you know, to go on a path which is ultimately a good path. We'll continue with some more of these, you know, very unique insights of the Svarno Be'ezus Hashem tomorrow. Yeah? Yeah, okay, no, I hear. I mean, but that's where he's going with it, you know, 100%. Yeah. Okay, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch